From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Packed edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast on this Thursday morning. Thanks for being with us. Couple guests on today's show. We're going to talk with Stephen Godfrey. He's been pretty busy the last few weeks and really busy from a publication standpoint yesterday. Stephen publishing the comprehensive story of Spencer Moncrief and Dante's eligibility in 2013. Essentially how the sausage gets made from an NCAA standpoint. You can read that all over the internet. You can go to 38 Godfrey, however, to see his content on his Twitter feed. He links it all there. So Stephen joins us on today's show. Last night, Stephen also broke the news that the NCAA will request for Leo Lewis to appear before the COI when Ole Miss has that sometime probably in September. Stephen also says it's possible it runs all the way into October before that happens. But either way, Leo Lewis to be asked to be in front of the COI. Stephen discusses that and more on the show with us today. Also, Matt Moscona, Baton Rouge radio personality, great radio guy. He talked to him because he interviewed Steve Robertson a few days ago, and he did not know Steve whatsoever before this. He's not embattled in it every day kind of like we are. He did not have any preconceived notions, had no idea who he was whatsoever. He'd never heard the name Rose Bowl was a nickname. So we want to get his take on his thoughts on Robertson, what that's like, and how he came across to Matt, because, again, Matt did not know him, and what Steve said. So that and much more with Matt Moscona later in the show. He talks about Matt Luke. He talks about the Ole Miss job. Talks about LSU's thoughts as far as a fan base on the Ole Miss situation and more. So really good stuff. We'll talk a little more about that when we get up with Matt. We're going to start with Stephen in a few minutes. And as always, the podcast is brought to you by the Oxford Exxon and the Oxford Crystal at the Oxford Exxon. You get the $4.99 lunch specials. You get the ribs at night and much, much more with a clean and convenient store there on Highway 6 West at the Oxford Crystal. You got hand-spun milkshakes, chocolate, vanilla, strawberry, and Oreo. Also doing the Kool-Aid slushes. Those are made with Sprite. You got green apple. You got grape for those. And the spicy chicken chick is back on the mix and match 5 for 5 at the Oxford Crystal. So check all those things out. And again, we're coming to you from the Clark Ford studio.
We are indeed. Clark Ford is in Amory, Mississippi. The phone number is 662-257-1900. You call that number. You ask for Corey Clark. You tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. No haggling. It's right to the bottom line. Just a great deal from the very start. It is an easy, efficient car buying experience. Now, if you want to get the quote and you want to make it complicated, you can. It's America. You can shop it around. You can call dealers everywhere you want to call and shop that deal. Shop your quote. See if you can improve it. That's up to you. Or you can make it really easy and do what so many listeners to our podcast have done, and that is let Clark Ford take the hassle out of the car buying experience. It's right to the bottom line, like I said. And you could even save $500 more off the bottom line right before your deal. Say, hey, Corey, I heard about your dealership on the podcast. You can mention this podcast. You can mention the Beer Garden podcast. Either one, $500 off. The bottom line from Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900, clarkfordinc.com.
So not much reason to analyze it. We get to get the man himself in a minute to talk about his stories yesterday.
About 10 minutes after the Lewis story broke.
Yeah, it was quick. Stephen was in San Antonio, he was flying to San Antonio and then in San Antonio when he did the interview last night. So Right. Again, we taped last night. You know, two different stories here. Lewis being asked to go in front of the COI, he's not required. If he does not do it, he at least runs the risk of his immunity being dropped and his eligibility being in danger. Stephen will have more on that, obviously, but that's kind of the setup for that. And then the Spencer Moncrief story yesterday. We had known a good bit of this. We had written a good bit of this, but not in this totality by any means. For the person who understands the process, like you and I, Neil, or the person from Dubuque, who just stumbles across this, not really understanding much of the process. It's a terrible look for the NCAA.
Oh, God.
It is a racist look for the NCAA. It is profiling for the NCAA.
It's agenda-driven for the NCAA.
And it's selective.
It's bad. Let me say something real quick.
Okay.
A lot of people ask, and I've kind of kept this because it was a personal conversation. I'm going to let a part of this out because, frankly, why not? Hugh Freeze and Mike Sheridan had a run-in sometime in the spring of 13. The tweet was out February the whatever of 13. Sometime thereafter when the NCAA said, okay, big boy, you going to call us out like that? Show us up? A dumb tweet. A really stupid tweet. And for those of you who get on Ole Miss compliance, justifiably, Ole Miss compliance told him not to put that tweet out. So you got to take a little heat off Matt Ball and company there because they told him this tweet's going to be a problem. But Hugh Freeze said, no, no, I'm above it. Send. So they have their meeting. And in that meeting, understand, when you're sitting down with the NCAA, love them or hate them, they're in control. They're powerful. You're not. I make the police comparison all the time. When the redneck police officer that has a one-third of your IQ pulls you over, for about 10 minutes there, you got to just shut up. Yes, sir. You know what I'm talking about. The guy comes up. Any particular reason you're going so fast? I mean, there's about 15 things that come into your mind that are sharp-witted that would be funny to you. Your answer needs to be, no, sir, I didn't mean to be going so fast. I appreciate you calling me on it. Here's my license. I'll sit here, and I will take the ticket, and I'll let you give me a lecture. And when you're done, I'm going to roll my window up, and I'm going to pull out slowly, and I'm going to dog cuss you for the next 30 minutes to me and only me, and I'm going to get it off my chest, and I'm going to get home, and I'm going to tell people what a giant redneck buffoon you are, and then I'm going to let it go, and I'm going to pay my ticket, and I'm going to move on with my life. Because the alternative is, you would like to step out, put your hands on the vehicle, I'm going to take you in. No, why do you want to do that? Well, Hugh Freeze decided to basically do the, I'm smarter than you, you shouldn't be pulling me over, let me tell you all the reasons you shouldn't be pulling me over, and it got ugly. There are some people that say that Hugh Freeze pulled out Bible verses. I don't know that. I can't tell you that happened. I can tell you that it did not go well, and Hugh Freeze's own words, compliance didn't prepare me well for that meeting, because it's never Hugh Freeze's fault. So understand, when Mike Sheridan later, and I'm not justifying Mike Sheridan because I'll rip him here in a minute, but when he sees an opportunity with something with Ole Miss to go get him, he was motivated.
So as you're reading Godfrey's story, hassled bank employees, contacted people about Apple passwords. Did every achievable thing with the lack of subpoena power over a car note for a 2009 Dodge, if I have it correctly. I don't have the story in front of me. Essentially a $500 payment, I think Moncrief told Godfrey or told someone at some point. Like I said, I get that there is a list of registered vehicles. Every school keeps this. It's an NCAA thing. After USC, I think, was what kind of made this get implemented. And while on the surface, that's a perfectly reasonable reason to look into something, the harassment and the lengths that this went to over something is ridiculous. Also, because of one picture, how many pictures get put out of recruits with new cars and prospects and signees and players with new cars? Because of one picture, it launched this segment of the investigation to the point of declaring Moncrief ineligible until he could prove his innocence. Backwards, yeah. Here, where if this thing did not get settled fast enough, he was not going to play against Alabama.
Right.
It is amazing to me. My biggest take, and I told Neil this last night, we had Dan Wilkin on the show. You can go back and listen. You missed it, although if you're listening today, you probably listened then too. And he's mentioned this in print. He mentioned this with us. We kind of had a small cordial back and forth about it. Your fan's on because the computer's hot. Because he talks about how once the woman that was with the Horizon Conference, again, I can't remember her name, whatever, was replaced with John Duncan after the Miami debacle, that the NCAA reorganized and is doing things different and doing things the right way. I have somewhat of a limited view because I cover one team and I see things. Here's my point, though, and what I believe. They're no different. They're exactly the same as they were then. They're running through the same practices. They're running through the same crap. They're being true believers. They're being people who miss the forest for the trees intentionally. They're selective. They're agenda-driven. Yeah. And all the difference is John Duncan's got a couple mouthpieces that shoot his message for him and try to convince people that they are different. That's my belief.
Couldn't agree more. Look, the deal with Moncrief is racist. It's racist. Now, before everybody goes, well, it's only Ole Miss. No, it's not. I talked to someone yesterday. I'm going to protect him here because I don't know that he meant for this to be public. He is a co-worker. I'm going to be very vague with everything.
Yeah.
He is a co-worker with a man, an African-American man, whose son signed a Big 12 basketball scholarship. Vague enough, isn't it?
Yeah, you're fine there.
The man makes about $250,000 a year. He's in sales. His son, basketball player, got a car. Family paid for it. And the boy did what my daughter did when I got her a used car. She took a picture of it. Put it on Instagram. That's what kids do. When I got a car, I didn't have internet. Hell, I don't know if I would have taken a picture or not. Most kids do. This young man, African-American, took a photo of his car. And the NCAA has blown up the dad's phone. And the inclination was to just go, you know what? Middle fingers, baby. You telling me a black man can't make money? Why can't a black man make money? Black men make money. But he didn't. He said, you know what? I cooperated with them. I just did it because otherwise they will harass you. They will ruin your life. And, of course, he was able to document that, hey, you bastard, I make enough money to buy my kid a car. Eat a bag. Which I'm sure felt good. But so when people go, it's just Ole Miss. No, it's not. No, it's not. And when you say that, you're being hyperbolic to the point of losing credibility.
And there are exceptions. There are cases you can find of the differences, so don't give me that. But, Neil, it's your belief that, on average, the person you're talking about, Dante Moncrief's family, they have to prove this more than if you or I were five-star running backs.
Yes. I'm saying that if my daughter Campbell was a volleyball player.
Yeah.
And she signed a volleyball scholarship at Oklahoma.
Yeah.
She's white. I'm white. It's my opinion that the NCAA would never bother me. They would never say, hey, Mr. McCready, and I'd have to say it's McCready, I need you to document how you can afford your daughter's vehicle there. That's in the picture on her Instagram. Of course, I'm not sure I'd be diplomatic. I'd be pissed. And I get why the Moncriefs are pissed, and I get why other people are pissed. And for the record, I get why Ole Miss fans are pissed. Alabama's signing class comes out every year, and it's one kid after another in front of a brand new car. Are you investigating those? Now, I will tell you that Alabama's genius about it. Paperwork's done, baby. Everybody cheats. And let me go one further. I'm with Andy Staples here. We need to pay the kids. They're making billions for the university. Drop the Title IX crap. Get away from this and come up with a way to compensate these kids who are putting their bodies and their brains, frankly, in harm's way for our entertainment every Saturday. Pay them. Call it what it is. Get away from this amateur crap. It's over. It's antiquated. They deserve to be paid.
With that, we'll go to Godfrey. If we do that quickly, I tell you that the podcast brought to you in part by Right Way Meds. Okay, now it's pretty much a typical pharmacy, if you know by now. They deliver the medicine to your door. Makes it easy. You can skip those pharmacy trips. Also, it comes in strip packets where you tear off the first dose of the day and the next dose ready when you are.
You don't want to know.
I'm trying to not look at you while I'm finishing up this segment here.
You don't want to know.
Again, doctors, medical providers, also check out Right Way Meds because they help with compliance numbers. Huge deal in today's economy and medical market. So, again, rightwaymeds.com or Right Way Meds on Facebook. Check them out.
Oh, Lord. The podcast also brought to you by Captain John Fryer, Tuna Chaser Charters in Biloxi. John handles inshore, offshore fishing expeditions 4 to 12 hours. He knows where to put you on the fish that you want to catch. This time of the year, snapper and cobia are the most popular trips to take. The snapper season in Mississippi waters runs through Labor Day. Another popular trip for visitors that don't have as much time is the inshore trips for speckled trout and triple tail, sometimes called blackfish. You can reach John through his website if you're interested in blackfish or snapper or cobia or deep sea fishing. It's tunachasacharters.com, his Facebook page, or you can call John at 228-348-7817. We are fall camp starts what next week? So that means tailgating starts in about a little over a month. You want to have someone help you with tailgating. It's going to be hot. It's going to be crowded. 7 South Tailgating is the way to go. Kyle and Jordan Thornton. They own 7 South. It's the largest staff in the Grove. They can service any of your tailgating needs, SEC-only packages, full-season packages, rental packages, and more. They offer complete setup, game day concierge, post-game trash removal, equipment breakdown, year-round storage, and more. They'll set you up in the Grove, the Circle, outskirts of campus. 7 South Tailgating is the largest vendor in the Grove, yet they still manage to know each customer personally by name. 7 South typically sells out every game, so visit the site today. Secure your spot. If you give 7 South a try for one season, you'll never tailgate without them again. The site is 7southtailgating.com. You can reach them by cell 662-321-1682.
Stephen Godfrey now on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline.
All right, Stephen, welcome into the podcast. I know you have had we taped this on a Wednesday night. You have had a really busy day. Two big stories, your Dante Moncrief NCAA story was published this afternoon, 2 o'clock-ish. Don't hold me to that. I don't know that it really matters. And as we tape this at 8:43 Central Time, your story, NCAA wants Mississippi State's Leo Lewis at its hearing against Ole Miss, was just published about 10 minutes or so ago. I'll let you pick. Where do you want to start?
Oh, man. Sleep would be nice. the Lewis thing is fresh, so I guess we can talk about that.
All right, let's start there. Leo Lewis, you obtained a letter dated May the 17th from Xavier, Athletic Director Greg Christopher, who's the Chief Hearing Officer of the Committee on Infractions. He wants 5 former Ole Miss football staffers, 1 current assistant coach, John Duncan, and he is instructing all these people, and Jeffrey Vitter about the hearing, and he wants Leo Lewis there. He says that the panel will request student athlete Leo Lewis attend the infractions hearing. It doesn't mention Kobe Jones. We'll get to that in a second. Let's start with Lewis. First of all, congratulations on the story. Second of all, what do you make of the NCAA wanting Lewis there?
Well, I think the best thing to do is explain the NCAA is a very large apparatus. And so specifically what's going on here is that there is an enforcement staff that operates the investigations. And that's what people, that's what Ole Miss fans and Mississippi State fans and everyone else, that's what they've been talking about when they talk about the NCAA for the past 4 odd years. Same with North Carolina. You have an enforcement staff that essentially, and this isn't a loose metaphor, they're the cops. They go out and they put the case together. They talk to people. They get information. They get witnesses. And they build a case, and then they take it and they present that. The university has a chance to respond. Sometimes that goes back and forth depending on what's going on. In Ole Miss's case, it was a little bit more complicated in that there was an amended notice of allegations. So they did this twice in a big circle. And then it goes to something which is called the COI, or the Committee on Infractions. Now, no one that works on enforcement is on the Committee on Infractions and vice versa. The Committee on Infractions is the NCAA's structure where they attempt to have an independent body. Even though it's all inside the NCAA in their membership, the COI is essentially their, again, we don't like to say court because it is not a court of law. This is not a civil trial. This is not a criminal trial. So when you use those words or those metaphors, sometimes people think it is going to play out like a courtroom. It does not. It is a hearing in which the parties go. They speak in front of a group, and that is the committee. The committee listens to what they have to say. Sometimes they ask questions. Sometimes they don't. And then the committee goes, and the committee still has – there's no verdict. No one bangs a gavel. The committee has 90 days to issue a response, and that response, that decision is it. That's what everyone's been angling out and about and around and all this for the past, you know, since the first NOA was issued on Ole Miss back in January of 16.
You've got a lot of stuff here. I mean, as I read this, as you talk, you broke a lot of news in this story. I mean, as I read this, I realize how thoroughly I just got my ass kicked by you. So, no thanks. You write that multiple sources confirm to SB Nation that a date in mid-September or mid-October is likely. If I'm Ole Miss, mid-October scares the hell out of me because 8 weeks after that is mid-December, and right. I got to do a coaching search. You also report that the hearing – I've heard this as well. The hearing likely won't occur in Indianapolis, but instead at an undisclosed location closer to the Ole Miss campus in Oxford. And then you have
And that's not unique. For instance, yesterday the news was out. I think I saw it on the AP that, you know, North Carolina is going to have its COI in Nashville, actually, yep. Where I live. So this is not unique to Ole Miss.
Interesting. You write paragraph quoting Stephen Godfrey. That is, if Lewis shows up. He doesn't have to show up. He's not compelled to show up.
Right.
If he doesn't show up, your opinion, you know these things kind of well, does that work against the investigator's case?
It's hard to tell. Again, we make the mistake a lot of comparing these things to criminal and civil proceedings and trials. And the same kind of lawyers are involved on every side of this thing. And so to think that it's not like no showing a court appearance on a traffic ticket is what I'm trying to impart here.
Right.
Now, look, there's a scenario in which Leo Lewis comes with his representation and they answer a few questions from the committee and everything is fine and Leo leaves. That's as likely a scenario as anything else right now. The problem for Lewis at the moment is that he's at the center of a civil suit that's been filed, specifically the Rebel Rags case, where he's listed as a co-conspirator with Kobe Jones, with Lindsey Miller, the former stepfather of Laramie Tunsil. So the other issue being that case, the case against he and the other co-conspirators alleged, is predicated on what those lawyers say are conflicting statements and inaccurate statements that were given to the NCAA. So there's a conflict here. Lewis has limited immunity. We can talk about that in a second. But Lewis is fighting even more than a two-front war here. So it's a very unique situation. It's really we're getting towards unprecedented. So I think regardless of whether or not you're an Ole Miss fan, a Mississippi State fan, or whatever, this is running into a dangerous territory in terms of perception for all parties involved. Because he's the linchpin here, and he is the centerpiece, and I say that because he sits, you know, there's nine editions in NOA2. He sits at what, five of them?
He's involved in multiple.
Yeah, right, four level ones. This has sort of been a long time coming, depending on who you talk to, in that there was a lot of people in the industry outside of Ole Miss and Mississippi State and the state of Mississippi and that rivalry were taken aback. And I wrote this back in February when he's student athlete 39 or whatever he's named in that first response. When it's found out that Lewis is sort of the crux of that amended NOA, because everyone was led to believe that Lindsey Miller and the Laramie Tunsil situation, what happened on draft night, was going to be how the NCAA piled on, when in actuality it wasn't. And so there's still a growing concern right now out in schools and staffs and coaches outside of the state of Mississippi on what kind of precedent this could set, if any, where you have two rivals going at each other. One school gets the kid, the other school doesn't. How limited immunity translates. It's fascinating. There's more people watching this than I realized. Sometimes, you know, having gone to school at Ole Miss and I lived in Mississippi and I covered all three schools. I was there for 10 years. So I know the bubble and how things are outsized when you're inside of that bubble. But I was actually shocked as I've worked on this that more people than I thought are watching this case, especially in the Southeastern Conference.
Kobe Jones is not granted immunity. I mean, you're breaking a lot of news here tonight in a quick period of time. Kobe Jones not granted immunity. Multiple people, self-included, have said that he was granted immunity. What's that about?
Hang on, you're breaking up there, Neil.
Oh, could you hear me now?
You there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Kobe Jones not granted immunity. Why have we all heard that he was?
I don't know. I mean, I've talked to multiple sources, but it's Leo specifically that was granted immunity because of this. I think, again, maybe it's the timing in which that Jones talked to investigators and where he was as a student athlete. Specifically, Lewis is – his immunity is – and I don't know, maybe it's just because of the civil case against him. It's fascinating, Neil, in that he's compelled to go do this, and he's basically entered into an agreement with the NCAA, and now, you know, because of the civil suit and because of, I think, the, you know, I'll be very careful with my words.
Yeah.
He was interviewed three times by investigators.
Yeah.
That's a lot of information. He has mentioned specifically different pieces of that information. Again, testimony is not the right word, but the information that he provides, the comments that he made, are mentioned in the responses of a variety of coaches at Ole Miss to rebuke claims against them. Some of the arguments, objective, you know, lawyers with no dog in the race have told me some of those arguments are tenuous at best.
Yes.
Some of those arguments are dead on. And so it's going to be interesting to see how someone whose comments affect so many pieces of this is going to continue to speak and get. I mean, if you're Leo Lewis, this is the question I'm asking. If you're Leo Lewis, what's in your best interest at this point?
Well, you're right along those lines. You say if Lewis doesn't show, he could void his limited immunity, jeopardizing his eligibility and his professional football prospects. It's in his best interest from a professional standpoint to show up so that he protects his immunity.
And again, I want to be 100% clear here, Neil. If he doesn't show up, that's not a guarantee that the committee or enforcement, both parties, have the ability to revoke the limited immunity on an individual, on a student athlete, prospective, current, or former. That doesn't necessarily mean that that will happen. Again, it's the perception that's at hand. If he doesn't show up now that he's been requested by the committee, how are those arguments going to go when the individual lawyers for, say, a Barney Farrar, Chris Kiffin, Hugh Freeze, Maurice Harris stand up when they continue to challenge the credibility of this individual?
Because Ole Miss and its attorneys and Rebel Rags and its attorneys are essentially saying that Lewis is a liar. I mean, if you boil it down, that is what they're saying. Even after all of what's happened in the past week with Hugh Freeze and the disgrace with the escorts and the massage parlors and the phones and whatever else might come, they're saying that the entire second NOA is built essentially on a series of lies. And so if that's the argument that's being made to the Committee on Infractions and the star witness, essentially Leo Lewis, doesn't show up, despite the fact that they requested that he show up, that puts the Committee on Infractions in a really weird spot.
I don't want to make bold declarative statements here. I'm trying to be careful in that.
Sure.
Everything in the amended NOA is bunk or discredited. Obviously, the lawyers for the university are going to try and go that route. What I know is this at this point. every single person involved in this case, the NCAA, enforcement, the committee, the University of Mississippi, the lawyers representing the individual coaches involved in this, both current and now pretty much everyone is former. I think the only person listed on there is there's one assistant left that actually still has a job there.
Maurice Harris.
And now you have a student athlete actively playing for another school, and he hinges on so much. I think we're entering uncharted territory here. Now it's going to be very, very interesting to watch. And of course, because of this, on a lighter note, I mean, this gives birth to any number of conspiracy theories and any number of, you know, wild accusations. And this is the Southeastern Conference. I mean, this is as potent and insane as any Iron Bowl rivalry. I mean, people in Mississippi know that. So this isn't just a simple proceeding for the NCAA. I think they, you know, it's been a long day dealing with the NCAA and sort of the perception of what I wrote in the other piece, but I don't want to make any statements about the NCAA right now in terms of opinion. I'm just working this as a reporter, but I will say I think they underestimated, as they got to the third act of this thing, how ugly it would get in the public forum.
We take a break in this interview to tell you about Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga. They're 30 years old this year, one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. Now, underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. You're getting local underwriting that understands your market. They're also the leader in condo financing in Oxford, so ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float-down option. It allows you to lock in the current rate, but if the rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. You can contact him at 662-234-2704 or JLowe, it's J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com.
The podcast is also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. Currently, Ben Brown and his team are looking to hire part-time and full-time sales team members across Texas and the Southeast to join their team. They offer extensive training, support, and the best products and pricing in the industry. Whether you're looking to supplement your current income or find a better career opportunity, email Ben at benbrown@journeybizsolutions.com. They are looking for motivated individuals with some sales experience, a business degree, or are close to completing their business degree who have a passion to serve small business owners. They have an exceptional uncapped commission structure and are an equal opportunity employer. Email Ben today. The podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, look no further than Grenada Nissan. It's just off Interstate 55 in Grenada, Mississippi. Grenada Nissan has a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissans, great lease deals, great service after the sale. It's just an easy car buying experience. You can take my word for it. I've done it 3 or 4 times now. You can do it there at Grenada Nissan, GrenadaNissanUSA.com for more information. The podcast is also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is the sponsor of my 10 Weekend Thoughts. That'll be published sometime late Sunday. And Harry is also a RE/MAX Legacy Realty agent here in Oxford. No one knows the residential and condo market in Oxford better than Harry. Go to his site and he'll prove it to you. It's harryalexander.com. Click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab. The results that you get are updated daily, and you can filter through and kind of find what you want. And then give Harry a call. It's give him an email, I should say, ha@harryalexander.com. He'll take care of you from there. Make sure you get a deal in the Oxford market that you'll be pleased with now and down the road. Now back to the show.
Yeah, I'm going to get to your Moncrief story in a second, because if I'm the NCAA, it would have made me go pour a big glass of bourbon into a glass and go close the door and turn off the lights and drink, because it was really a bad look for the NCAA. We'll get to that in a second. I do want to ask you this, and I know you didn't address it really, not directly at least, in either of your stories today. Hugh Freeze resigns.
Yes.
Basically fired, whatever. How, in your opinion, will that, if at all, impact what happens in front of the Committee on Infractions for him and for the university?
I don't know if it does. I think for him, it's a different circumstance, maybe in the way the argument that he and his counsel might put up. And to ask me much more, I'm gonna plead ignorance in terms of legal strategy.
Yeah.
But one thing, and I'm sure you got hit with this too in the slew of media since he was fired. I went back and tried to tell people whether they wanted to listen to it or not. That's fine. nothing changed on the NCAA case the day he was fired. What was it, a Thursday? Right?
Yeah. Thursday night. Yep.
Nothing changed. I mean, this was essentially another day in the process in which Ole Miss, for how many years now, Neil, has gone about defending their head coach, trying to maintain their status quo, and trying to function as if, hey, we're going to be okay, and we, as in Hugh Freeze, head football coach, and his staff and his players, are going to be fine in the long run. That's the image that Ole Miss wanted to present throughout this whole process. They fired him because of the escort service, the phone, all that stuff. As of right now, go ahead and say this for the 2,000th time. I was asked, does it have any connection to recruiting? I was told it was not by multiple sources.
Yeah,
obviously,
Ole Miss is
very invested in that being the case. So, given the way that this thing has played out and the layers, especially when it involves Freeze, feel free to take that for what it's worth. But I think there's definitely two directions right now. There's the NCAA direction right now with Ole Miss, and then sort of the wake of what happened with Freeze. And if there's any reverberation with Freeze right now, we think it's not going to involve the program. Right now, comma, we think.
There are a lot of people who are speculating, and this might be hopeful on their part. Or it might be some people just trying to find a lane that might not exist. Do you put any stock at all into the theory that some have postulated that Hugh Freeze now being sort of out there on an island where the NCAA could drown him and leave Ole Miss sort of to be with the punishment that they have in place? Do you put any stock in that at all, that, hey, there's a path here to almost a compromise without even having to compromise, that you could leave the one-year bowl ban in place, you maybe add a couple of scholarships, you hammer Hugh Freeze, you hammer Barney Farrar, you sort of, everybody moves on, some of the civil suits go away in the Lewis matter, and it all just kind of comes to a fairly neat package. They put a bow on it and move on, and nobody has to worry about this moving forward. Do you buy that at all?
I doubt it. I don't know if... I just don't believe the theory that the NCAA or Ole Miss, let me go back. I don't believe that the NCAA was invested in quote unquote just getting Freeze. Now, did it get personal at times? I believe it did. Did it get unprofessional on both sides? I believe it did, based on reporting. That's not conjecture, that's just based on reporting. However, I don't think, first off, the committee doesn't operate like that. The committee doesn't. If anything, if that were the case, Neil, we would have seen the enforcement staff pull down and revoke some of this stuff. They had the chance to do that. That chance has passed. They have not. They held on to everything that was in the second NOA. And if you're same thing I would do if I was on the enforcement staff. Just because he's gone, I don't really see the reason for that. And also, keep in mind, there's a Hugh Freeze past Ole Miss, you know? Whether or not he gets a show cause affects his career long after whatever he did at Ole Miss.
Yeah, for sure.
So there's that. And I think Ole Miss did not ever, Ole Miss has always, based on conversations I've had and the reporting I've done, they've always felt like they had a puncher's chance throughout this process, a puncher's chance enough to where they did not fire their coach. I mean, that's what I keep going back. People always ask, and I get this a lot from some of the national colleagues I have, why didn't they just fire Hugh Freeze? Why didn't they just fire Hugh Freeze? Right? That was sort of the narrative for about a year. I think we talked about this on your show. I mean, the short answer is that Ole Miss believed that they didn't have to.
All right. I know I don't have a ton of time with you. You're busy. You got a lot of stuff going on. Let's get to your other story about Dante Moncrief, the NCAA investigation back in the spring of 2013. It all starts, according to your reporting, which I have absolutely no reason to doubt, with one photo on social media of him in front of what turns out to be his brother's car.
Yes.
All right, here's the question that so many people have, and this is a really fair question, okay? Number one, it's a twofold question. Number one, how is that enough to launch an investigation? And two, if that's enough, What about all the hundreds, and that's not an exaggeration, all over the country of pictures that kids put out in front of cars after they've signed an NLI saying things like, hey, the struggle's over, I made it, stuff like that, where one could say, well, how did that kid afford that car? How do they pick and choose?
I don't know. I'd love to know. I love to know. That's what's fascinating. We've written about the NCAA for as long as I've been at SB Nation, and we've written about some of the dynamics that occur. And, you know, this is not limited to Mississippi. This is not limited to the Southeastern Conference. But in this instance, I don't have an answer for you. I know every single thing. Every single thing I know is put into that piece because it took a long, long time to come together. It was a story that I had heard. Story is probably the wrong word, but I was told about the interaction between the family and the NCAA, and it's been a long enough time for me to forget when I heard it, but I didn't believe it until I dug and talked to people, and the information checked out. After speaking with the family, it checked out, and it was. I think here's the best way to view that, the Moncrief story. If you're an Ole Miss fan, it angers you. If you're a Mississippi State fan, you're saying it's not news or fake news or whatever. I think it's really better to look at it as an example of whether or not this is the exception or the norm and how the NCAA investigates these cases. Because I don't know. I mean, we don't know. There's very little transparency in this. And the more I talk to people involved with this case, and the more I talk to people who have handled, you know, be it USC or what's ongoing with North Carolina, the NCAA is not really compelled to turn over how they do things. There's very little transparency. And so I got the reaction that I expected from the NCAA. I had transparency with them as I was going through. I had communication with their operations team, their communications team. I brought them the information, and we included their comment in the story. I felt like that's the most important thing that you can do, is represent them as much as they want to be represented. I had a list of questions. They obviously declined comment because it's still Moncrief, even though this occurs in 2013, is still part of the Ole Miss investigation, which is active. So I don't know is the answer. What we do know is this. We, you know, our outlet specifically, we're always fascinated with how these things work, how these kids specifically, how these student athletes are treated, what they know, what they don't, when they do, and what their rights are. And so once I was able to vet out and confirm that this was the process, then I thought that if it's this interesting to us, I'm sure other people would find it interesting. It's going to live, Neil, in the context of a rivalry, and that's fine. It's going to live in the context of this investigation.
Yeah.
I don't care. That's fine.
Right.
But I won't be shocked as I continue to work on this, as others do, hopefully. I think that how the NCAA operates, how things get sliced up behind the scenes, I think is of great interest to its constituency, specifically its members, its universities, and its student athletes.
You want to know what I thought when I read the story? Two words.
Go.
That's racist.
I don't know. Look, here's the deal.
I'm not saying Sheridan's a racist. I'm not.
Right. But I don't want to get into this thing
I don't know him, and I would want him to have an opportunity to defend himself before I said, hey, you're a racist. I don't like that. That's not fair, and I hate it when people do that. But when I read that story, that's what came into my mind. And my point is, if that's what came into my mind, that's what came into the minds of a lot of people who are not emotionally engaged in the Ole Miss-Mississippi State rivalry. If you're sitting in, I always use Dubuque, Iowa as an example. I don't know why. If you're in Dubuque, Iowa, and you don't give a damn about Ole Miss or Mississippi State, and you read that story, your sensibilities are offended.
Well, I can't speak to that. Again, though, I can only speak to an interest in transparency in the process. I don't... And every dealing I've had with the NCAA, let me say this, has been above board. They have expressed a desire to be as communicative as possible about the situation, every possible situation we talk. And the problem is it has to be in the abstract. They can't just flat out say, hey, you know, this is what we're working on, or what's, you know, that we can't do that. I understand that. But at the same time, I sent them a list of questions. They declined not to comment. I would love to interview Michael Sheridan. I'm not going to get that opportunity, more than likely.
Dante Moncrief, the fact that that didn't end up in the NOA, was that a result of, here's my question, was that a result of Sheridan maybe going too far? Or was that a result that they didn't find anything? And then my second question is, so many people in the national media, guys that I like, guys that I respect, guys that I know you feel the same way about, they reacted to your story today by saying, well, you know, Sheridan didn't violate any NCAA rules. He might have gone all the way to the end of the diving board, but he didn't jump in. And that's what you have to do, and it's the process. And they really defend the process. I know I just threw a lot at you. In your opinion, did that not end up in an NOA because they didn't find anything, or because Sheridan went too far? And then what do you make of some of your colleagues sometimes where it looks like they're really toting the water for the NCAA?
I don't know, to answer the first question. I don't know. I would love to know. Again, this is the kind of stuff where, obviously, as a reporter in this process, what's my end game? As much transparency as possible, because I'm trying to write a story. So that's my objective and intent with that is clear. This stuff is of natural interest to me, regardless of the logo on the helmet. I really do have a lot of questions about how the NCAA operates, how they select these things, how they disseminate claims. I can't answer your question because I don't know if there's a way, unless it's just a massive WikiLeaks sort of data dump scenario that happens one day with the NCAA, if we're ever really going to know that kind of stuff. So I don't know. As far as the perception of the media, I don't care. I flat out don't care. And I just don't.
What's next? I know you worked a ton on the Moncrief story. The Lewis story came together maybe a little quicker than you anticipated that it would. There's a lot of talk that you have another big overarching story that's in the works. Was this it, or is there more?
There's more. This is not entertainment. This is not. I take this stuff as serious as I can because to me it's important. So I'm not going to make funny gifts on Twitter or tease things, but yeah, no, I'm going to work this story as long as I feel like there's something that needs to be told and I have the ability to do it. So that's my answer.
It's great work today. I really appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Stephen Godfrey for joining us on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline. The Rebel Locker Room is on West Jackson Avenue in Oxford. It is the place to go for all of your Ole Miss gear. We were telling you about the tailgating a little while ago. You got to get your gear ready, too. It's going to be hot. I was wrong about the time of the South Alabama game. It's 6:30. UT Martin's at 11.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was not 2:30 for South Alabama.
So fans get one, we get one.
Yeah. One and one. We're all even. It's like a damn democracy. Everybody gets a little something. I haven't kept up with the news, but it's my understanding that there's not much compromise going on in Washington.
No, we're compromising better than our government at the moment, I think.
Anyway, the Rebel Locker Room has all your gear, all the colors, all the styles, everything you want right there in one place. Ole Miss football tickets, Ole Miss men's basketball tickets available at olemisstix.com. That's olemisstix.com. One of the sponsors of the Beer Garden is LB's Meat Market. Let me tell you about LB's here on this show, too. It's 2008 University Avenue in Oxford, 662-259-2999. You give Greg Jones a call. Tell him what you want. He'll have it bagged up for you. They have a lunch menu, catering menu. Or you can do what I love to do, which is go into LB's and just sort of check things out. They've got all the fresh cuts. The freshest cuts in Oxford are at LB's. Choice grade Hereford beef,
grass-fed free-range beef from Joyce Farms. They have the free-range Joyce Farm chicken breast that they pack individually and seasoned. Half or whole chickens are available. They have the locally raised pork from Home Place Pastures in Como. Their sausages are fantastic, whether you want them as an appetizer or a meal. They've got fresh sausages, smoked sausage, summer sausage. My favorite is the chicken jalapeno. You should try a little sampling and find what your favorite is as well. And when you go in, there's a beer fridge right there on your left. Grab a six-pack. You can make a mix-and-match six-pack thing. You know what I'm talking about. They've got all sorts of craft beers, that kind of thing. Make a six-pack of your liking and say you heard about it on the Beer Garden podcast or the Oxford Exxon podcast. And that six pack is $6. You can't beat that anywhere. It's LB's, 2008 University Avenue in Oxford, across from Kroger, 662-259-2999.
I can't imagine how, again, time crunched and busy he was yesterday. So thanks to Stephen for carving out those few minutes. We really, really appreciate that.
He sent me a text and he goes, "I've got 20 minutes right now if you have time."
Okay.
And I was, spirit of full disclosure, I was in, the Cubs were up 1-0. The bases were loaded for Anthony Rizzo. And I had just poured myself a glass of wine. And I said, you know what? I better go set up. I said, give me 2 minutes to set up. And as I walked in, Rizzo hit a double off the center field wall, scored 3 runs. And I said, you know, it's going to be a good interview. And Stephen was great. He was great.
He's probably a little tired.
He is, but he was on adrenaline at that point. He was still pumped.
Still going?
Yeah. The tired for him won't hit probably for another few days. And then he has another story he's working on. But this is what he lives for. That guy's born reporting. He's fantastic at it. And he's really fortunate. SB Nation says, go get it. Take the time. Whatever you need, we'll support you. The everyday reader can't and shouldn't know all that went into that. A lot went into that. A lot of lawyers, a lot of conversations, a lot of editing, a lot of questions. It was good work.
Local level being kind of whatever, SB Nation nationally does a great job of giving him resources in today's market where it's, hey, go find the thing that's interesting. Just do it. There's not a cookie cutter mold here. Just go see what it is.
And this Ole Miss case is interesting.
Yeah.
Because there aren't many good guys in this story. There's lots of bad villains kind of going at each other. It's kind of weird.
I had I was talking to a Florida media member covers Florida the other day, and he was mentioning all the chaos at Ole Miss, and it's like, that's got to be kind of fun or whatever. And he just, in passing, goes, I really wish there'd been more scandal to McElwain on the Shark. And I said, yeah, probably a good point there. I was like, you're getting a pretty buttoned-up program with McElwain and the Gators right now.
Yeah.
Not much going on down there. So,
something could go on. Who's the AD there?
One, Scott Strickland.
Never know.
He's the athletic director at Florida.
Never know what might all happen.
He used to be the athletic director at Mississippi State.
Oh, is that him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know Scott.
Baseball coach at Georgia too, right?
He is the baseball coach at Georgia, at least currently. Probably might be on a little bit of a leash there. Might be a little going on, but All right, we're not going to waste a lot of time here. We're going to go to Matt a good bit with him as well, almost half hour. And you really ought to listen. Matt, just a great guy, good radio guy as well. He gives some thoughts on Matt Luke because, frankly, he experienced a similar situation as Ed Orgeron went from interim to head coach at LSU. And Matt gives some thoughts on what that means for Matt Luke, what that should mean for the Ole Miss program, and just some thoughts from a state over on the Ole Miss job. I think if you give Matt a chance here to really think about what he's saying, you'll enjoy the interview. And again, we lead with his thoughts from his interview with Steve Robertson as well. So here's Matt Moscona. We're going to close the podcast today with this. This will be the end. We will not be back after Matt. But hang in, listen to him, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. But first, on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline, here's Matt Moscona.
All right, Matt, thanks for joining us here on this podcast on Thursday. Appreciate your time. I know it's you've got another full day ahead of you. Something tells me your day won't be quite as crazy as ours. You had Steve Robertson on yesterday, and I always say to people, I love to get, quote, outside views, because we get wrapped up in the intricacies of it here, and we see it day in and day out. What were your impressions of him from the interview?
Well, full disclosure, I had never met, talked to, or even knew of Steve Robertson before I read Mark Schlabaugh's piece. So I went in having quite literally zero preconceived notions. Only after reading all that did I find out about the fact that he ran, you know, worked at Jeans Pages, and that he did the Rose Bowl thing, and that apparently, you know, in 2001, that apparently has gotten him a nickname that stuck. So I went in without any preconceived notions about him. I expected to hear a Mississippi State fan that was going to be reveling somewhat in the Ole Miss coach being fired and him having a hand in it. He might have been completely BSing me on my radio show, but I came away thinking he's a really introspective guy. And maybe the thing that struck me most was at least how he described it to me. And again, he this may have just been for show. As I mentioned, I don't know Steve. But the pause that he took in considering what to do with the information about Freeze's call to Florida when he got it, considering Freeze's family and his daughters, and as he put it, the collateral damage. Not everybody in our business is that careful, especially in the Twitter age. So I came away, I guess I'd use the word impressed. That's probably not the right word, but I'm just struggling to find a better one. But I was definitely struck by the fact that he was very introspective. I thought very thoughtful and really candid. I mean, I asked him some pretty blunt questions like, do you hate Ole Miss? Are you a Mississippi State hero? And he took them all head on. I was impressed with his level of candor.
Okay, I give him credit because a lot of Ole Miss people say, oh, you know, I don't want to. He did take Hugh Freeze down. He caught that number. He got it without catching that number. Now, I think Hugh Freeze eventually goes down for personal reasons. I do. It's my opinion. Chase knows that. I've felt that for a while. But I don't think he's – I think he's still the head coach at Ole Miss today if it's not for Steve Robertson in the last few weeks. What did he say about did he hate Ole Miss? Did he consider himself a Mississippi State hero? Because he is a Mississippi State hero. I don't get in anybody's heart about hate and love and stuff. I have no idea. But what did he say?
I would encourage anybody to go listen. It was, I always find that a good interview happens when the answer leads to the next obvious question.
Yeah.
And normally, guys, in my radio show, I'll go like 7 to 10 minutes. I'm looking up and it's 14, 15, 16 minutes and I'm not done. I'm like, I have to wrap because I have to. But as far as, you know, does he hate Ole Miss? He was very quick to say no. And he brought it to the players. He said, you know, there's a lot of kids from Mississippi that would never get a chance to go to Ole Miss or to Mississippi State. And, you know, you follow a lot of these kids throughout the recruiting process. And yeah, I'm paraphrasing his words, but it was to the effect of, you know, I'm happy that so many of these kids get the opportunity to better their lives. He did not speak glowingly of some of the administrators and I guess some of the flack he's taking from them and maybe some of them that have hidden in his mind improprieties or whatever it may be. I won't pretend to speak for him in that regard. But as far as he's a Mississippi State hero, he said, you know, some think I am, but he doesn't look at it that way. I asked him point blank, you know, was all of this to help you sell books? And, you know, his answer was, you know, it's an unintended byproduct of it. And he pointed out, I thought fairly, if he wanted to, he could have broke the story on his website. He could have broke the story in the book. There's a lot of different avenues that he could have gone that would have been more beneficial than allowing one of the national guys to have the story. But as he put it, had I broken the story, they might have killed me being a Mississippi State guy. Those were his words. He was sort of half chuckling, but maybe half serious.
Yeah, I don't know. I've gotten, as someone who has, when I was in Mobile, got a death threat a couple of times, I can tell you that when people laugh those off, you didn't get them. When you get one, it's kind of a real thing. Even if there's a part of you, and I'm sure there's a part of Steve that when he gets a, quote, death threat, thinks, ah, it's not really a death threat. Yeah, it's a death threat. You don't, I mean, it only takes one bozo. It doesn't take a collection of bozos. It takes one. So I don't hold that against him. I get where he's saying there, and I don't hold the book thing against him. I'm just pissing people off today, I think, but I'm being honest. I don't. If you want to write a book and you want to market the book and the book sells and you make money, good for you. I mean, you got to make sure that you vet it through attorneys and things of that nature. But from your perspective, from the outside, here's the one thing about Steve that I don't. It's not about his view that I don't respect. He does not seem at all willing to go down the road of, hey, Ole Miss cheats, Mississippi State does too. Leo Lewis didn't sign with Ole Miss. Kobe Jones didn't sign with Ole Miss. I have a difficult time just as a pragmatic person, and you've known me for a while, Matt. I'm sort of a, here's what I think. I have a difficult time believing that Leo Lewis got five-digit, according to him, offers from other schools and signed with Mississippi State out of love. I don't buy that. I don't. Not only do I not buy that, I would bet my children's lives against that.
I do feel bad, Neil, for those that are naive enough to believe that that's the case, because they're living in a completely different reality than you, me, and all of the other rational thinking people walking the face of planet Earth. And the thing is, and I think deep down every fan knows that everybody cheats. It's just a matter of who's better at it, who's better at hiding it, or does it more discreetly. But again, to the way you set it up, Neil, I don't know Steve. I mean, I've literally in my life became aware of Steve Robertson, that name, on, what was it, Monday night when Mark Schlabaugh's piece hit, and then I got Steve's number through the LSU, Billy Embody, who writes for the LSU affiliate of Skin. I called Steve, and he agreed to come on the show. I actually texted him. So the first time I ever literally talked to him was on the radio. So I don't know. I don't know what his, you know, what his view, I couldn't speak accurately on what his views on all of that are. You would know much better than me.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's fascinating to me that the two things is, one, kind of like Neil said, Steve, I think, builds the subtitle, or what one of the main phrases of his book promotion is blind faith culture for Ole Miss. And I think it's the same culture everywhere. I think it's like the college football culture, not the Ole Miss or the blind faith culture. But then, as you said, it's so fascinating. A lot of the reasons we had you on is because you didn't know Steve, because we've been embroiled in this every day to the point of overload, for the lack of a better term. And Steve has done a really nice job, when you really break it down and just focus on this part, of staying kind of above board with the legal portion and how he promotes all these things to new viewers and new people. It's just such a contrast to how fiery and crazy this entire rivalry has become inside the state of Mississippi.
It is. The more I hear and the more I learn, the more I can understand that, Chase. I did ask him, I said, why are you, a Mississippi State writer, writing a book about Ole Miss and their scandal? And his response was, because nobody else would. And I don't know if that's true. You know, I know that, for example, if there were a similar situation at LSU and an LSU beat writer decided to dig and write an inflammatory book about LSU misgivings in recruiting or whatever it may be, it would be really hard to stay on that beat after that. And is there enough interest outside of the state of Mississippi for anybody to write that book? I don't know. I mean, I would lean on you two to answer both those questions. So
the answer is no.
Answer, yeah. So, but kind of, you know, Chase, to your question, or to your point rather, he has an answer for everything. And I don't know if it's, because I don't know Steve, I don't know if it's sincere, it sure seemed like it, or if it's just that he's he's been very thoughtful and well coached about how to answer all these questions that he knows he's going to get over and over and over again. But to me, you know, it sounded like a guy who was sincere, a guy who's a husband, who's a father, who's considerate of his family and things like that. But again, that's all based on one 15-minute phone conversation.
How much is all this resonating in Louisiana? Are people paying attention to it, or are we just off in our own little world over here?
No, yes. I mean, this has been the lead and the bulk of my show since Thursday. And it's kind of one of those things where, you know, you keep your friends close, you keep your enemies closer. And whatever happens in the SEC, particularly the SEC West, of course it's going to play. Because, and listen, here's the truth, guys. I think Ole Miss fans probably aren't going to want to hear this. But I'll say this bluntly. If you're LSU, you don't need Ole Miss and Mississippi State competing for access bowls and playoff spots. Like, you don't need Dak Prescott coming into your building and scoring 40. You know, you don't need to go take a 17-point loss at Vaught Hemingway Stadium. You got enough on your plate, having to play Florida every year, having Alabama being what they are, you always have this tussle with Auburn. Like, if you're in the upper echelon in the East, if you're Florida or Georgia or Tennessee, like, you need Vanderbilt and Kentucky and Missouri to be the runts that they are. You need your breather every now and again in conference play. And every conference has them. And in the West, it's traditionally been the Mississippi schools. And LSU, LSU fans recognize, like, you know, the reason, for example, Les Miles got fired isn't because he couldn't beat Alabama anymore. It's because you look up and now you're losing by three touchdowns at home to Arkansas, and then Dak Prescott scoring 40 on you in Tiger Stadium, and then you're losing by 17 in Oxford, and, you know, Leonard Fournette and Brandon Harris are going the wrong way. I mean, that's what cost Les his job, was losing those games that you're supposed to always win.
Yeah.
And when you're losing those, then you're not just, hey, beat Alabama and you're back in Atlanta. It's, you, even if you beat Alabama, you're still not there because you lost to the Mississippi school.
We pause 1 second to tell you about MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape. They're a full-service lawn maintenance and landscape company serving Oxford, Tupelo, and the surrounding areas. No job too large or small for MasterCuts. Some of the services include landscape design and installation, landscape lighting, irrigation, maintenance, and turf installation. They do holiday lighting during the holiday season, and they take care of your mosquitoes if you're having that problem around your house. If your yard's not up to par, give MasterCuts a call for a free quote, 662-607-7773, mastercutslawn.com. I use them every couple weeks, and you should too. You can sign an annual contract, and the first cut will be on them when you mention the podcast.
The podcast also brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air has been serving Oxford and the surrounding areas for the past 26 years. I've used Comer for AC repair. You can take my word for it. Their attention to detail, their customer service, and their work is second to none. Comer is an American standard dealer, but they work on any maker model, residential or commercial. Customers get same-day service, free estimates on new units, and preventative maintenance contracts. Visit their website, comerheatingandair.com, or check out their Facebook page. Mention you heard about them on the podcast, and you get $20 off. Contact Eric at 662-934-3846 or Shane at 662-832-8749. The podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you want, but with the personal touch. There's no 10 buttons to press, no 5-minute wait at OUB. What OUB does offer its customers is the absolute best cash checking account. It's called Kasasa, and with Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% interest on their balances up to $50,000. With Kasasa, ATM fees nationwide are refunded. OUB also offers online bill pay and mobile check deposit using its online app. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. The podcast also brought to you by Michael Oswalt. Michael's a realtor, specializes in recreational and timberland tracts across the state of Mississippi. He works with Tom Smith Land and Homes. It's by far the largest broker of land in Mississippi. You can look him up on his site. It's gotland.com. That's got-land.com. You can read his recent testimonials, check out his track record, see what he has listed. Just know this, the land market's really hot right now. If you're on the fence about selling your land, your hunting club share, or your home with acreage, now is the time. Give Michael a call today. 662-719-3967. He's ready to meet with you, explain the process. If he can't earn your business in that meeting, he doesn't deserve it. You can also check out his Facebook page or send him an email, michael@tomsmithland.com. Now back to the show. It's like at Ole Miss. For Ole Miss to achieve, it has to beat Vanderbilt and Mississippi State every year. If those are games that are competitive, you're screwed. It's over. Ball game.
Yeah, I mean that I guess is the parallel that maybe Ole Miss fans can understand. So that's why, in part, this has been a huge. I mean, of course, it's salacious and has all the checks all the boxes for why people find it interesting. It's why you've got so much national media there in Oxford right now following the story. I mean, it checks all those boxes. But I mean, if this were happening at Ohio State, no, it's not as big a deal. I mean, it's happening one state over, a team that you play every single year, and quite honestly, has been way more competitive than you'd like for them to be.
You've watched and dealt with a situation similar to what Ole Miss is dealing with. Ed Orgeron obviously promoted and then ends up getting the full-time gig after Les Miles, and maybe he was the most competent candidate, whatever, but a lot of emotion in that state about him. Ole Miss dealing with that right now a little bit with Matt Luke. Matt Luke, a great guy, no doubt about his love for Ole Miss. And he's going to get, as Ross Bjork said, 12 dance floors to try to prove that he is the right guy for the job. In watching what happened at LSU and kind of playing the similarities, what's kind of your immediate thought on Ole Miss's situation? And what would kind of be your advice for fans in trying to watch this thing play out over the course of the year?
Don't hire Matt Luke. I mean, I don't care where he went to school, where he played. He's never been a head coach. And if you're going to throw, if you have the resources to throw $4 million at a coach or more, and you're in the same division with Alabama and Auburn and LSU and Texas A&M and their resources and Arkansas and all their Walmart money, that's in your division, by the way. Go hire somebody who has proven he can win and build a consistent winner. You don't hire the rebound. I mean, you don't marry the rebound. You go through a messy breakup and you go to a bar and you meet the chick that makes you feel good and picks you up a little bit. Like,
yeah,
you don't marry her.
No, you wait till you get your feet back under you. You wait till you kind of have your emotions in check and you can go hunt for the right girl.
Yeah.
You go, the rebound is the one that you call at 2:30 in the morning when you're kind of alone and you say, hey, baby, can you come over? And you know she will because she's hoping she can go from rebound to permanent. I'm speaking purely hypothetical. I have no experience with this.
She's the one that at 2:15 just reacts to the text message that's two characters up, ?
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it.
And she says, on way.
Yeah.
I don't know, Neil. This sounds way too familiar, man.
That's never happened to me in Monroe, Louisiana. Never did. Never. There were never nights in Monroe that I got through bartending and I got back to my apartment on Sterlington Place or wherever it was at 2:15, and I said, I wonder if she'll answer the phone. This was before texting. That's never happened.
Oh, you actually had to call.
You had to call.
Ooh.
That's waking people. That's
Your wife doesn't listen to the podcast, does
God,
she?
I hope not.
In a very awful transition, back to Matt Luke. You don't hire Matt Luke. There's nothing he can do this year that would prove that he's the right guy for the job. Like, literally nothing he can do. You go hire. So I'll give you an example. When the Mike Leach stuff happened at Texas Tech, Ruffin McNeil took over in the interim and did pretty well. Won the bowl game. Players loved him. They rallied. They won. He would have been the emotional hire. and Texas Tech's administration said, no, we're not going to go that direction. And Ruffin McNeil went, he got a head coaching job at East Carolina, and that didn't go so hot because it's a, there's a big difference between being an emotional lightning rod whose job is just, man, keep it together this year, and being the person that builds and sustains success. Like, that's my argument with Ogeron over and over. He's been great in that interim role because players love him. He, you know, reduces the practice workload. He's a fiery guy. But he's never proven he can build and sustain success at that level. And so you're taking a huge risk. You'd be doing the same thing with Matt Luke. I'll give you a name. I have no idea what Ross Bjork is looking for, but I'll give you a name who was on high on LSU's list, who wanted the job, and that's Mike McIntyre at Colorado. I have very little doubt that a guy from Miami who played at Vanderbilt and Georgia Tech, who's coached at Ole Miss, would be willing to come back into the SEC. And he's a guy who took over at San Jose State when they were a disaster, three seasons, got into 10 wins. He goes to Colorado, and we all know what the last decade in Boulder's been after the Katie Anita scandal with Gary Barnett and then the disaster that was John Embry. Fourth season, gets them to 10 wins, wins the division. There's a guy that's taken over two awful situations and proven, give him time, he'll win.
Yeah,
without resources.
Sorry, he actually hired Freeze for like a week at San Jose State before Freeze took the job at Arkansas State back in the day. Yeah, Ole Miss fans love McIntyre. Yeah. Love him.
I didn't even know that, but like, if you're letting me make that hire, that's my guy. I mean, I don't know what else is attainable as far as, you know, is there someone in the upper tier that you could lure away? But that feels very attainable, and that's the guy that I know if I give him time, he's going to win consistently because he's already done it taking over two bad jobs.
If Ole Miss avoids the two-year bowl ban, it's a pretty good job. If you avoid the two-year.
Yeah, I think it's a good job anyway, Chase. Like, and I'm not, you know, like pandering to your audience here, but whoever gets that job is going to make, I mean, conceivably $4 million a year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they could conceivably make five.
Grace period.
Yeah.
And like, whoever takes that job amid scholarship reductions and a bowl ban, you recognize that you're going to be given time, which is not something everybody in college football, every coach is given nowadays. So I think there's a lot of appeal to that job. Now, not knowing what other jobs are going to come open, you know, in this coaching cycle. But, you know, if you go back to the question we started with Matt Luke, that's settling. Regardless of what he does this year, hiring your interim, that's settling. And people always bring up Dabo Swinney, and you know, that's the hope, but he's the gold standard. Guy was a receivers coach, had never even been a coordinator, does good in the interim, and gets the head coaching job, and now he's a national champion. But there's far more, you know, hires from within, guys like Larry Coker and, you know, Bob Davey or Mike Archer at LSU. There's far more of those than there are Dabo Sweeneys.
Last thing here. Really appreciate the time. Gave us more than we asked for. What's a successful season for Ed Orgeron as we kind of close? What calms things down with him? What is realistic and what is successful?
You asked like four different questions that I think all have different answers.
All right.
Like, what's realistic? What's successful? What calms things down? Like, those all have very different answers. Like,
right.
If I'll put it to you this way, Chase, if he gets to 10-2 this year,
ooh,
build him a statue. Like, all of my questions about Ed Orgeron will vanish if you win 10 games this year, because I don't think you're very good at quarterback. You lose everything on defense except for Arden Key. And oh, by the way, he missed spring and just had shoulder surgery. So they got a lot of talent, but you lose 19 seniors, 10 guys to the draft, three first-round picks, two top 10 picks. I mean, look, I love Dave Aranda. I think Matt Canada is going to be a really strong offensive coordinator, but you also play five road conference games this year because of the Florida mess last year. You've got to go to Alabama, to Florida. once the calendar flips to October, you don't have another breather. Your whole schedule at that point is conference games. So, I mean, if I think what's realistic is 8-4, I think if things go their way, they can get to 9-3. But if he manages to squeeze 10-2 out of this team, that is a remarkable season for Ed Orgeron.
Yeah, that's fair. It just it feels, I don't know. I've been around him, you know, it was 10 years ago, and maybe he's whatever, but it just feels eventual train wreck to me. Maybe not now,
that's,
but eventual.
And that's fair. You know, it's the evidence. It's the evidence that we have, and it may not be this year or next year or whatever it may be. But players like him, and make no mistake, he's got far more talent now than he did in 05 when he took over in Oxford. So, I don't see the disaster like the 5-7 type.
No, I was thinking 7-5. Happening.
7-5 would look. 7-5 would have a lot of people, you know, would give a lot of people the sphincter check.
Yeah.
If they go 7-5 this year,
LSU's a better job than 7-5. If you go 7-5 at LSU, it's failure.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, I'm sorry, it is. LSU is a baseline 8-4, 9-3 job. It just is. It anything less than 8 wins at LSU is failure. You should do better.
And 8-4 and 9-3 got Les Miles fired.
Yeah.
So how long is that standard acceptable? I don't know. I mean, they're obviously not going to fire the guy after 1 year. But you know, and he may up and surprise us all. Maybe he is just a vastly different coach and person than he was 10 years ago. You know, when he got fired at Ole Miss. But guys, we've talked about it enough that I'm like head of the line of the skeptical crowd.
Last thing, you mentioned Les Miles. I'm just curious, your opinion. Does he have any coaching left in him, or is he done?
It depends where he wants to coach or where he's willing to coach. I'll put it to you that way. I mean, I believe there's a job for everyone. It's just a matter of, are you willing to take that job? So, like, should a major Power 5 or any Power 5 school hire Les Miles? No. He's 63. His best coaching days are behind him. The game, even in the last 5 years offensively, has evolved so rapidly, and Les hasn't kept up. I don't know what makes sense for him. I mean, is there a MAC school that says, you know, let's bring in Les Miles just to bring notoriety to our program? Like Akron hiring Terry Bowden. Maybe something like that, but I don't know if Les wants to do that. But as far as being a major college head coach, it feels like the Philip Fulmer scenario where he was out. He was kind of in that really weird zone where, you know, if you hire him, you probably don't have him for another 10, 15 years. You probably got him like 3 to 5 years, and he still wants to coach, but it's just about that right opportunity and him, his willingness to take it. You know, and what happened was Fulmer seemed desperate. He was applying and throwing his name out publicly for every job, and the more eager you seem, the more desperate you seem. And I think Les is probably, you know, approaching that territory. So, look, I mean, if he wants to take a group of five job, a MAC job or something like that, yeah, I think he could. But I would be surprised, and admittedly, guys, pleasantly surprised if Les gets a Power 5 job somewhere.
You mentioned it a minute ago. Where can people find the interview with Steve if they'd like to?
Yeah, if you go to our website, just 1045ESPN.com. My show is After Further Review, so if you look at like AFR, there's an on-demand tab. You hit the drop-down, find my show. Just scroll back, and you'll find it. I tweeted the link and all a bunch, so you can find it there, too.
Okay. We'll have people check that out. And, Matt, we really appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Thanks,
Matt.